From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The Supreme Court today effectively backed the Obama administration, preserving Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, and averting what many predicted could be a catastrophic elimination of assistance to millions of Americans who depend on insurance subsidies for their health care. Chief Justice John Roberts wrote the 6-3 decision. He was joined by Justices Kennedy, Breyer, Sotomayor, Kagan, and Ginsburg. Justices Scalia, Thomas, and Alito dissented. We will unpack it all from every angle this hour on Point. The High Court saves Obamacare. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Did the Supreme Court get it right? Are you cheering? Are you disappointed? Do you understand this decision? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. We'll be looking at this High Court decision from every angle in this hour. We begin with a look at the ruling itself with two top-flight constitutional law experts who have firsthand experience at the Supreme Court. With us from Philadelphia, Kermit Roosevelt. He is professor at the University of Pennsylvania Law School, clerked for Justice David Souter at the Supreme Court. Professor Roosevelt, Kermit Roosevelt, thank you for joining us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you on such short notice. It's just come out. And from South Bend, Indiana, Amy Barrett joins us, professor at the University of Notre Dame Law School. She clerked for Justice Antonin Scalia at the High Court. Professor Barrett, Amy Barrett, thank you very much for being with us today.
Hi, Tom.
Amy Barrett, may I come first to you? And how do you read the reading, the legal argument, if that's what it is, in this decision?
Well, I expect that Professor Roosevelt and I might disagree about this. I think the dissent has the better of the legal argument. That's not to say that the result isn't preferable. I mean, it's clearly a good result that these millions of Americans won't lose their tax subsidies. But just in terms of the analysis of the statute, seemed to me, I was on kind of thinking that the phrase established by a state was clear.
We should go back through this. So Obamacare, at the heart of it, you have marketplaces in individual states. The assumption was that the states would run their own. Many decided not to. In fact, a lot. What is it? 34 states did not set up their own health insurance marketplaces.
Correct.
Now, the legislation that passed said that that tax credits or subsidies would be authorized for those who bought health insurance on marketplaces that are, quote, established by the state. When it didn't turn out that so many states had their own marketplaces, this was challenged. If it had gone the other way, it would have brought down much of the structure of how this worked. Kermit Roosevelt, there are the words, established by the state. Amy says in legal terms, it should have gone the other way. Legal terms can mean a lot of things, I guess. How do you read this decision?
Well, I think, you know, in part, I actually agree with Amy. If you look at that phrase by itself, established by a state, I think, yes, state means state. It doesn't mean the federal government. But if you look at it in the context of the whole statute, you do see that reading it that way, one, creates some strange oddities in its interaction with other sections of the statute, and also ends up really destroying the whole aim of the statute, which was to provide affordable health care to all Americans. So I think the outcome is right. You can argue about what the right way to get there was. Maybe we should say this was just a mistake, but I think the outcome is correct.
We've got a little sound here from Justice Scalia. This is on a different case, but the relevant here. This is in oral arguments for King versus Burwell in March of this year. I mean, a different hearing, not the decision itself. And Justice Scalia, who dissented in this decision today, emphasized that the court needed to interpret relevant statute as it was written, not as the writers of the law might have intended.
It may not be the statute they intended. The question is whether it's the statute that they wrote. I mean, you know, there are no provisions in a statute that turn out to be ill-considered and ill-conceived.
Justice Scalia, in oral arguments over this case, King Burwell, the decision out today, what about the issue of intent, Kermit Roosevelt? Does that have standing? It clearly does. The Supreme Court's just given a lot of weight here, with John Roberts saying, look, they passed the Affordable Care Act to improve health care insurance markets, not to destroy them. He was willing to go with intention, not with wording.
Yes, well, that's one of the big disagreements that people have about how to interpret statutes, whether you should look just at the words or whether you should consider the intent of the people who wrote it. As sort of a middle ground, you could say, we look at the words, we figure out what the statute is trying to do, because the statute has a purpose, even if we're not talking about the subjective intent of the people who wrote it, and we don't read words in a way that undermines the purpose of the statute. So that's sort of middle ground. It's not saying exactly what particular members of Congress were thinking. And if you do follow that approach, I think you lead to the conclusion that the word state has to be read in a different way than it normally is.
Amy Barrett, let's go from text to precedent. Is the precedent for the high court reading law with the sharpest eye on its intent rather than its actual wording?
Well, I think Kermit's right. The court kind of goes back and forth on the priority it places on text versus intent. I also agree with him that purpose is important, and Justice Scalia's dissent emphasizes that point. But I think Justice Scalia's point is that purpose or intent can't overcome clear text. And here, it seems like that's what the majority's opinion did. It said, listen, if Congress could have anticipated that so many states would decline to set up exchanges, it would not have wanted that result. So we should adjust the text to accommodate what Congress did not anticipate.
Kermit Roosevelt, I don't know how closely you follow this. Does this look like the last of the legal challenges to Obamacare? In legal terms, does this look like a settled legislation now? We're done with hearings on this in courts.
Well, I think this is the last of the existential challenges. So the last of the challenges that might really bring down the whole system. I'm sure we'll see more litigation going forward about various implementation devices that the administration has used, and in some ways they've delayed particular aspects of it. So I think there will be more challenges, but I think that on the whole, the act is now safe.
What does it tell us about the court itself, Amy Barrett? This has been seen as a conservative court, but is it?
You know, I don't think it is, and I think that this term is showing that. I mean, I think that the Chief Justice, when he was appointed, many thought he would be very, very conservative, and I think he showed himself to be much more of a moderate, and the two big Affordable Care Act cases show that. And Justice Kennedy, of course, has always been a swing vote and in the middle.
Kermit, what's your sense of what this tells us about the court overall and its complexion?
Well, I'm sort of in the same place as Amy on that, although I got there by a different route. I thought when Roberts was confirmed that he would be moderate, and then I was very disappointed in a number of cases, and I thought that he was a very conservative justice. In this term, he's been looking a little bit more moderate, certainly. I think he's moderate on some issues. He represents more of a corporate Republican perspective than a Tea Party Republican perspective. I do think on race he's pretty conservative, and I think the Roberts Court has moved to the right on race.
Kermit Roosevelt, Amy Barrett, lots of callers coming in on this. Steve in Miami, Florida. Steve, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Thank you. I think that what the court did was standard first-year law practice or law school judicial interpretation. When you've got an ambiguity in a statute, you don't try to first throw the statute out. You try to reconcile the ambiguous part of the court. I think in the opinion, which I read this morning, went to great lengths to try to iron out those ambiguities. But I also think that this may foreshadow what's going to happen with the gay marriage case that's coming out either on Friday or Monday.
In what direction, Steve?
I think more liberal, because Justice Roberts has shown that he's willing to swing over to the left side of the court. And, you know, Kennedy is certainly always been that swing, but I think there's probably a good chance that you may see the same 6-3 split on the court. I don't think that Alito or Thomas or Scalia are ever going to vote for gay marriage, but I think there's a good chance that the others might.
Steve, I really appreciate your call. Amy Barrett, first to this issue, I mean, you know, what is conservative and what is liberal? If the court had taken this phrase, which clearly did not align with the intent of the law and overturned, in effect, the whole law on that basis, would that have made it an activist court, not in line with the conservative legal principle?
Well, let's see. I think that the phrase activist court is sometimes used to describe a court that is willing to overturn statutes passed by Congress or state legislatures, for that matter.
Yeah.
But I would say that, actually, I don't think of the term activist in that way, because you might say that to uphold the Constitution as against legislation is actually what a court ought to be doing.
But support of the Constitution, is the Constitution a schoolmarm saying, you know, you misspelled here, so we throw the paper out, or is it about intent?
Well, the Constitution, I think, is the governing document. It always trumps statutes. I think on the question of intent, I guess what I would hasten to say here is we don't really know the purpose. I mean, there's a political story, and everyone saw the videos of Jonathan Gruber saying that this was a carrot and stick thing, and what Congress wanted to do is provide the subsidies on the exchanges to incentivize states to set them up. And then the carrot didn't work. I mean, and the stick being that your citizens didn't get the subsidies if the state wasn't the one to set up the exchange. That's not an implausible understanding, and I'm not saying that Jonathan Gruber's understanding of the law determines what the law means, but the fact that he said it, as you know, and he was closely involved in the drafting of the legislation, shows that it's a perfectly plausible account. So I'm not really sure that we can say that the intent of Congress was opposed to this.
Kermit Roosevelt, does John Roberts somehow go against the Constitution when he looks at his, he clearly perceives this as what he supported today as the intent?
Well, I think John Roberts was doing the sensible thing here. I think it's also not activist. I think that activist is a very confused word that mm-hmm. people use in lots of different contexts to mean lots of different things. But I think that this is a reasonable example of statutory interpretation. I think the court got it right.
We've got the high court today by 6-3 vote saying, look, even if the word said something a little different, we're going with the intent in the legislation that established Obamacare and interpreting that to mean that subsidies should go on, whether states have their own marketplaces for health insurance or whether they have been provided by the federal government, which has stepped in many states when states refused to go there. Bottom line, Obamacare goes on rather than crumbling as it might have if the decision had gone the other way. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. We are talking about the Supreme Court, in effect, having saved Obamacare today with a 6-3 decision that will not undercut the huge legislation of the Affordable Care Act that established it a couple of years ago on the basis of a phrase that said that subsidies would be provided when insurance marketplaces were, quote, established by the state. The implication there was the individual state. Of the 50 states, many did not establish those marketplaces. Court, in its decision today, written by Chief Justice John Roberts, said Congress passed the Affordable Care Act to improve health insurance markets, not to destroy them. If at all possible, we must interpret the act in a way that is consistent with the former, improve them, and avoids the latter, destroy them. Those words from Chief Justice John Roberts in the majority, 6-3 majority. He was joined in that majority by Justice Anthony Kennedy, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Stephen Breyer, Sonia Sotomayor, and Elegan Kagan, the three opposing the decision, Clarence Thomas, Samuel Alito, and Antonin Scalia. With us today, Amy Barrett at Notre Dame Law School, Kermit Roosevelt at the University of Pennsylvania Law School. You're welcome to join this conversation. This was a decision of great, great potential weight. There was celebration outside the court today after the decision came down. ACA, Affordable Care Act, i.e. Obamacare. And here speaking after the decision earlier today, Ronald Pollack, Executive Director of Families USA, applauding the court's decision to reject the challenge to the Affordable Care Act.
Today's decision has monumental significance. It means that the Affordable Care Act is not just the law of the land, it will remain the law of the land. It means that the millions of people who have been receiving subsidies that make all the difference in terms of whether health insurance is affordable, people will continue to receive those subsidies and they will continue to have health insurance.
There, a celebration of the High Court's decision today, there was also quite the opposite. Rand Paul said it turns both the rule of law and common sense on its head. Senator Marco Rubio, another Republican candidate for president, said, I disagree with the court's ruling and believe they have once again erred in trying to correct the mistakes made by President Obama and Congress in forcing Obamacare on the American people. Well, it was a vote of the Congress, but even so, We've got legal backup with us here from Notre Dame and University of Pennsylvania Law Schools. We have a supporter and a critic of Obamacare with us. From New York, Jonathan Cohn joins us, senior national correspondent for the Huffington Post, supporter of Obamacare, author of Sick, The Untold Story of America's Healthcare Crisis and the People Who Pay the Price. Jonathan Cohn, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
And from Washington, we have Representative Marsha Blackburn, represents Tennessee's 7th District, Tea Party member, opposes Obamacare. Representative Blackburn, thank you for joining us.
Good to be with you. Thank you, Tom.
Jonathan Cohn, has the Supreme Court, in effect, saved Obamacare here?
It has certainly gone a long way. You know, this was a case in which there were, all along, there were two sides. There was the plaintiffs, the people who brought this lawsuit, who said the law was written in such a way that states would be able to, depending on what they did, some people would lose their subsidies, that, in effect, the law would be designed in a way to be non-functional. And the government, in response, said, are you kidding? That's crazy. Of course. We never intended the law to work that way. And with this decision, which was 6-3, this was not a narrow decision, the Supreme Court said the government is clearly right. This was a crazy lawsuit. I mean, this was a smackdown. And I was surprised, frankly. I mean, I thought it could go either way, to see a 6-3 ruling with two Republican appointees joining the liberals and a short, concise decision saying, look, this is clearly not what Congress intended, is basically telling the plaintiffs of the lawsuit and all the Republicans and conservatives who supported that, yes, this was crazy. This was not a good lawsuit.
Representative Blackburn, what's your response to the Supreme Court's 6-3 decision today, in effect, sustaining Obamacare?
What it means is that we will continue the work to repeal and replace the law with a health care that is affordable and access to affordable health care for all Americans. What has happened with the Obamacare insurance product is it is so expensive that you have to have subsidies, many people say, in order to afford it. And then when they get it, the deductibles are so high they can't afford to use it. So in that vein, it is not workable. And, you know, the Supreme Court decision does not change that. It does not change the fact that we hear from citizens every single day who will call the offices and say, look, I have it, but it's too expensive to use. So therefore, basically, I have something that does not work for me and my family, and you need to do something about it. We will continue to do something about it.
Representative Blackburn, I think as of March, there were about 10.2 million people signed up for Obamacare, paying the premiums. Almost 6.5 million of those were receiving subsidies in the 34 states that have not set up their own health insurance marketplaces. If your concern is affordability, wouldn't it have been pretty rough on that 6.5 million people if they had lost their subsidies?
What you want to make certain that you do is not leave people in a lurch who have been pushed into this program. Bear in mind, you had 6 to 6.5 million people who lost the private health insurance they had been receiving and were moved into the Obamacare exchanges. Many of people have said, look, we just want to get back to something that we can afford that suits the needs of our family and not something with this explicit list of mandates requiring coverage for items that we're not going to use, like young men who have to have maternity care, teetotalers who have to have access to drug and alcohol care. And those are the type things that we hear for our constituents. Many will say, even though we are there and a part of this, the product is just too expensive to afford and too expensive to utilize.
Representative Blackburn, what were your hopes here? Were you anticipating that the Supreme Court would come in and pull the plug on these subsidies, which may well have brought Obamacare down?
Yeah, you know, I have learned never to try to guess what the court is going to do. They are going to work their will and make their decision. I did find it interesting that they have referenced what intent is rather than the law as stated. And I think that was an interesting part of the decision that came out today.
Do you have the votes or can you anticipate having the votes in Congress to actually repeal Obamacare and replace it with what?
Listen, at Energy and Commerce Committee, we had 162 different bills for replacement components. Let me give you a couple of examples. One, legislation that I've worked on for quite a period of time, and it is the across state line purchase of health insurance model. And you're hearing now from people on both sides of the aisle that that is something that maybe its time has come. And to allow people to buy an insurance product that suits their needs, not force them to buy a product that does not suit their needs. Another is the expansion of health savings account. We hear from so many individuals that were in the health savings account marketplace. They want to be able to return that and to have greater utilization of that type product. Both of those are great options for getting down the cost of health insurance and allowing more access to the healthcare marketplace.
And speak to the court itself, if you would, Marsha Blackburn, Representative Blackburn. Do you, as a Tea Party member, see a conservative court sitting in Washington?
I would love to see a court that is a constitutional court and will abide by the ruling, abide by the law as written and interpret the law as written.
Representative Marsha Blackburn from Tennessee's 7th District, Tea Party member there, Republican, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Jonathan Cohn in New York, do you see other potential legal challenges, or again, is that in the rearview mirror now for Obamacare?
Look, there are other legal challenges percolating up. There is one, for example, that is challenging another part of the financial assistance that the law offers to some people to help them pay their medical bills. Now, people who follow this stuff, you talk to legal scholars, they will tell you it's very far-fetched. Then again, I remember hearing the same thing about the last two big lawsuits, so you never want to discount these things. But the stakes are getting smaller and smaller and smaller. And again, I go back to this decision, and I'm just struck by what a strongly worded opinion it is, and the 6-3 majority. I mean, the Supreme Court, to me at least, seems to be sending the signal enough, all right? You know, you want to, you know, even these are Republican appointees, but saying to the Republicans, look, if you want to repeal this law, you have Congress, you know, win presidential elections, repeal it that way. Don't come to us to do your dirty work for you. So there are going to be legal challenges. And look, who knows? Maybe another one, you know, there are pieces of the law that may get challenged. We saw that before with the birth control requirement. This feels like, knock on, you know, mm-hmm. again, with the caveat that I thought this previously, this does feel like the last major legal challenge to the law.
Jonathan Cohn, Amy Barrett, Kermit Roosevelt, please stand by. Lots of callers for the three of you. Norfolk, Virginia, Jason is calling. Jason, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Don, good morning.
Hi, Jason. What do you think?
I definitely do not agree with the decision. I think it's a politicized decision, which is sad, wrong, and scary. It's almost as if the majority consciously misinterpreted what is clear in the text, which is why I say it's scary. But also, I just want to say one thing that at least one of the persons there you have speaking. As far as I know, the ACA does not provide affordable health care. It provides access to affordable health care insurance, which is totally different. So,
yeah, I mean, that's a big challenge for the whole country, and we get that. Jason, you say it's politicized, that they didn't go it was there in the text. But what about John Roberts, Chief Justice, saying it's clear what the law intended, and we're going straight for that? And let's not play games over a clause that's here or there.
Yeah, but he was on the cusp to right at the beginning of the health care law, was he not? I mean, he's the one who tilted it and said that it could go ahead. So, I'd kind of lost faith in him at that point anyhow.
Jason, we've got it, and I appreciate your call. One more, Colin in Boston, Massachusetts. Boston, Colin, you're on.
Hi, Tom. So I actually would like to offer just a counterpoint to that last caller.
Okay.
I think this is an outstanding act of a living constitution, of not being bound by this cold, dead document and adhering strictly to a word. It's looking at not just the foundation of why the Constitution exists, but why government exists, to make life better for people and to say, look, this is obscene to try and waste our time and resources over a word. If it's obvious that this is why the healthcare law exists, let's let it exist that way.
Colin, we've got it. Amy Barrett at Notre Dame Law School. Jason Cohn looks at this and sees what he calls a strong, simple decision, which he interprets in effect as saying, don't give us gamesmanship with these cases that are coming to the court. You know, don't mess around. You know what the intent was, and we're going with the intent. Do you read John Roberts saying that? Don't try and make us your puppet or tool here.
I don't. I don't see anything in his opinion who says that. And I wouldn't characterize it as a smackdown or a statement that this was a meritless lawsuit. I mean, it created a split in the circuit courts. The Fourth Circuit, which had ruled in favor of the government, said the government has the better of the argument, but only slightly. So, I mean, I don't think anyone thought it was meritless. And I don't think that the majority opinion reads that way.
Kermit Roosevelt, does this mean you can just write any darn sloppy thing into a law and count on the court to intuit what you meant to say?
Well, no. I think that would be bad advice to give to Congress. You know, one hopes that, generally speaking, Congress drafts its statutes carefully, and it has a number of procedures by which it ensures that the final product works and makes sense. And those procedures, a lot of them weren't followed with the Affordable Care Act. And different people blame different sides for that. You know, some people say the Democrats ran it through. Some people say the Republicans refused to cooperate. But you can certainly hope that most statutes will not be as badly written as this one seems to be.
One hopes. There's a lot of runaround to get to a decision. Carlton in Columbus, Georgia. Carlton, you're on the air.
Yes. My feeling is that the Republican governors out there are all breathing a collective sigh of relief that this passed because, you know, Republicans really didn't have an alternative to the Affordable Care Act, but they keep saying that they do.
They don't today, and you're quite right that this would have been a lot of Republican governors dealing with states no longer having the federal subsidy that's keeping everything running. I mean, there may be, at least for right now, a sigh of relief. Jonathan Cohen, was there a backup plan here? What if this had gone the other way for all these millions of people? What would have happened the next day?
Well, you know, it's impossible to know for sure. My best guess is that certainly at the federal level, nothing was going to happen. Republicans kept promising, you know, oh, we'll have a backup plan. We'll have some kind of transitional plan. But, you know, they never showed it. They never brought anything out, which, because as we learned through reporting, and if you talk to people, you heard this, they couldn't even agree among themselves what such a plan would look like. Many of them don't want to have a plan at all. And I mean, remember, this has been a pattern since the Affordable Care Act became law. They have been promising we will not just repeal the law, we will replace it. We will have some other, you heard Representative Blackburn a few minutes ago saying, well, you know, we'll have some alternative that will be better. They don't have an alternative.
Jonathan, hold the thought. We have the president speaking live on this right now. Kermit Roosevelt at University of Pennsylvania Law School, Amy Barrett at Notre Dame Law School. Thank you very much to you both. Here's President Obama on the court's ruling.
For many, insurance would have become unaffordable again. Many would have become uninsured again. Ultimately, everyone's premiums could have gone up. America would have gone backwards. That's not what we do. That's not what America does. We move forward. So today is a victory for hardworking Americans all across this country whose lives will continue to become more secure in a changing economy because of this law. If you're a parent, you can keep your kids on your plan till they turn 26, something that has covered millions of young people so far. That's because of this law. If you're a senior or an American with a disability, this law gives you discounts on your prescriptions, something that has saved 9 million Americans an average of $1,600 so far. If you're a woman, you can't be charged more than anybody else. Even if you've had cancer, or your husband had heart disease, or just because you're a woman. Your insurer has to offer preventive services like mammograms. They can't place annual or lifetime caps on your care because of this law. Because of this law and because of today's decision, millions of Americans, who I hear from every single day, will continue to receive the tax credits that have given about 8 in 10 people who buy insurance on the new marketplaces the choice of a healthcare plan that costs less than $100 a month.
President Obama speaking in the Rose Garden, celebrating the decision by the Supreme Court that, in effect, has saved the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Hi, everybody. Tom here. I'm glad you're joining us for this On Point podcast. Before we get back to the show, I'd like to tell you about another podcast you might enjoy, too, Dear Sugar Radio. Join hosts Cheryl Strayed and Steve Almond as they field questions about love, sex, work, guilt, money, you name it. That's Dear Sugar Radio. You can find it at wbur.org/Dear Sugar or subscribe on iTunes. Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. We're looking at the High Court, Supreme Court decision today that has, in effect, saved Obamacare. 6-3 decision, Chief Justice John Roberts writing for the majority that the intent of the legislation establishing Obamacare was what mattered here, not the language, which looked as though it might not have supported subsidies in many of the states around the country, as the whole thing has played out, could have taken away those subsidies and, in effect, the insurance of 6.5 million Americans and maybe brought down Obamacare itself. Jonathan Cohn is with us, senior national correspondent for the Huffington Post, a supporter of Obamacare. We heard from Representative Marsha Blackburn out of Tennessee, Tea Party member who has opposed it and says she will and others will continue to oppose it. Lots of response here today from around the country. Jeb Bush calling himself disappointed in the court's decision, saying we need a president, of course he's running for the White House, who will repeal and replace Obamacare with a conservative solution. Senator Bernie Sanders, also running for president, said at a time when the U.S. is the only major country on earth that doesn't guarantee health care to all Americans, it would have been an outrage to throw 6.4 million more people off health insurance. Chris Christie complaining, saying Scalia was right. State means state, not the federal government. Scott Walker saying now, instead of just finger pointing from the president for why his law is failing, we need real leadership in Washington. Congress needs to repeal and replace Obamacare. That was a statement released by his aides. Repeal and replace has become the alternative here to a high court decision that would have dumped it if it had gone the other way. Let's hear from our listeners. Steve in Windsor, New York. Steve, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Yeah, I'm going to kind of go against the whole grain here a little bit. I think the law was written as intended, and the phrase in dispute says what the court concluded it intends to mean, because the law was written in the English language, and the word establish has a meaning, and that meaning is not code or build a server.
What about intent? What if it was a screw up, Steve? They just got the wrong phrase in here, and it would have brought down the whole thing. Would that be okay with you?
I think no. That's not what I'm saying.
Okay.
I'm saying that the court's decision is consistent with the intent of that phrase.
I see.
The discussion here is not about, should not be about the word state. It should be about the word established.
Steve, we've got it. Many people read it the other way, but we've got it. One more. Thank you for your call. Canton, Ohio. George, you're on the air. Hello, George. Are you there, my friend?
Hi, Tom.
You're on.
I just had a couple of quick points here. First of all, I don't understand what the controversy is against the Health Care Act. That's number one. Number two, I'm self-employed. I'm 60 years old. And up to that point, I was unable. I was refused by countless insurance companies for health care on pre-existing conditions. And when the Health Care Act came along, I was able to afford health care insurance. My wife last week was admitted to the emergency room for low blood count, 4.8 when the norm is 13. If I had not had health care at this point, I would be in bankruptcy court right now because of the health care costs I would have taken on.
So, George, you're one of those millions, I guess, maybe relieved today that this is not all blowing up and going away. Jonathan Cohn in New York, I've just got you for another minute here. Okay, so we're past the major existential legal challenges here. What about the repeal and replace drive? Do you see that as having legs?
Well, you know, look, I mean, if the Republicans can elect a president and they can get a Congress, you know, they would have a chance to actually repeal the law. And, you know, and then the burden would really be on them to come up with a plan that would change it. I am skeptical, A, that they can get the sort of enough votes in place, but B, that they actually would make that change. You know, with this, one reason a lot of conservatives were hoping the Supreme Court would do this is because they know that taking a vote to take away the benefits from people like that your caller just now had, that is hard to do. And, you know, look, the Affordable Care Act is a even its defenders, people like me who write about, sort of think it, on balance is a good law. Well, not it has flaws. There are problems, things that could be improved. But at the end of the day, it is helping an enormous number of people. It is moving the country, apparently in the right direction on healthcare costs, slowly but surely. And to undo all of that is very difficult to do politically. And I think even Republicans realize that. That's why some of them were hoping the court would do it, because I don't think they believe they can get it done through the normal electoral process.
Jonathan Cohn with Huffington Post. Thank you very much for being with us today, Jonathan.
Thanks for having me.
Let's look at the politics of this. With us from Washington, Noam Levy, national healthcare policy correspondent for the Los Angeles Times. Noam Levy, welcome. Thanks very much for joining us on this day.
My pleasure.
And from Arlington, Virginia, Lisa Desjardins is with us, political director for the PBS NewsHour. Lisa, welcome back to On Point. Great to have you in this particular moment.
Oh, thanks. Hi, Tom.
Lisa, let me come first to you. The court has gone the way the court has gone. Is there now, or is there on the horizon, depending how the upcoming elections go, still a real and present political possibility of bringing this down? Or are we into the parties must now work together to fix it or change it or let it evolve? Even Jonathan Cohn says it could be better built.
I think it's hard to measure possibility politically right now, because obviously the next election will tell us so much, both presidential and congressional. But I think there is certainly a real political movement still afoot to not just reform the law, but replace it. And just minutes ago, Tom, House Speaker John Boehner held his weekly news conference. He was asked, as you can understand, a lot of questions about this decision. And I think one of the big takeaways from it is that he would not say either way whether he's going to use the spending process, which is probably the most important and powerful process Congress has right now, to try and repeal or replace Obamacare.
In other words, withhold funding from the legislation itself, the law.
That's right. But I think also perhaps attach to some appropriations bills, some must-pass bills, some kind of Obamacare legislation. Of course, there's been real political problems for Republicans doing it in the past, including government shutdown. And, of course, the president would veto that. But it's just to say that the speaker not kind of indicating whether he will use the most powerful tool in his tool belt in the next few months against Obamacare indicates that there is he knows there's a real movement in his conference. There's a real hunger to do something about Obamacare. And those politics may even grow as we see presidential candidates get more and more attention. The reality of whether that can happen is a different question, but the political movement is certainly there.
Noam Levy, how big a bullet did Obamacare just dodge? Was there a contingency plan to keep it rolling if this court had gone the other way or not?
Well, I think it clearly dodged a very large bullet. I mean, the challenge would not have destroyed the law, but it would have, as you noted earlier, jeopardized insurance coverage for more than 6 million people in at least 34 states. That would have precipitated almost certainly a political crisis as the president and Congress fought over this. And I think, a new political fight of that magnitude over this law would certainly have added to the problems that this law has endured almost since it was signed. So I think it dodged a huge bullet, and I think effectively ended the Republican campaign to repeal this. I don't think there's any chance at this point the law is going away.
Elaborate on that, because they're not going to have the court do the work for them. That is now established. But Lisa looks out and says there's still a lot of political momentum for that. Every Republican that I see on the record here today is saying repeal and replace.
They are, and I expect that they'll continue to say that. I mean, I think it's important to draw a distinction between the politics of repeal and the reality of repeal. The politics of repeal have always been extremely alluring for Republicans because the law is very unpopular with the base of the Republican Party, and because the Republican Party has reaped enormous benefits over the last 5 years from this repeal rhetoric. But as Jonathan Cohn noted, there's a big difference between having the court do this for you and actually having to take a vote. And the dirty little secret in Washington about Republicans and repeal is that a lot of the leadership doesn't have a whole lot of interest in engaging on this fight. I think it's actually quite notable that Speaker Boehner wasn't willing to commit to using every tool at his disposal to fight Obamacare. And I think the real people to keep an eye on here may not be the presidential candidates who are going to have to talk tough about Obamacare in order to get through Republican primaries, but take a look at what Republican governors are saying going forward. Republican governors are the ones who are living with this law. Many of them were quite worried about the prospect that their insurance markets would have collapsed and hundreds of thousands, and in the case of a couple of states, millions of their residents may have lost health insurance. I took great interest in what Rick Snyder, the governor of Michigan, noted today. There was none of the rhetoric that we see from Jeb Bush and the Chris Christie and so forth, and it was all about we're focused on keeping health care for our residents, and we're focused, he noted, on securing approval from the Obama administration for what the state wants to do with its Medicaid program. Those are the kinds of more pragmatic, I think, responses that are going to give us hints of where the law is going and where the actual implementation of this law is going, rather than the political rhetoric, which I think may be more sound and fury.
Noam, Lisa, stand by. More response from listeners. DeMarcus in Lawrenceburg, Tennessee. I think that's in Marsha Blackburn's territory. DeMarcus, thank you for calling.
Yes, thanks, Tom, for taking my call. I really appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
My comment was to express tremendous joy that Obamacare survived this recent assault to its existence. And I wanted to also comment on Representative Blackburn. I want to say that I've been very disappointed in her representation here in Tennessee. There are thousands of people in this state who are without insurance, and that is because our Republican governor and our Republican General Assembly, for some reason or another, simply will not accept the funds that the Obama administration has offered to help us expand health care coverage in this state. I think that's just unbelievable to me that they are fighting so hard to keep health insurance from thousands of people that desperately need that insurance.
DeMarcus, we've got it, the celebration and the critique there. I mean, that's what opponents of Obamacare will be up against. Of course, you still hear strong opposition to the program as well, but right there from Tennessee, very much the other way. Thank you, DeMarcus. Joshua in Columbia, South Carolina, you're on, Joshua.
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to say that I think that it would have caused a huge upheaval in the insurance market. I'm an insurance broker in Columbia, and we already went through one huge moment of chaos when the Affordable Care Act was over several years implemented. And I honestly was opposed to it in the beginning, but
yeah.
Now having so many customers who rely on subsidies to be able to afford their health insurance, my income relies on it too. These are customers who I'm able to provide insurance for because they are subsidized. And it would have caused so much chaos and so much havoc in the insurance market, if we were to try to switch back or revert back to something older or more outdated.
You're speaking as an insurance broker, Joshua. Do you think we're at the right place here, or do we still need to keep working on this? Do we have the right stuff now in this law?
I'm not going to say it's perfect. There's obviously work that needs to be done, but I think we're moving forward rather than backward. I think this would have the Supreme Court had ruled the other way, it just would have been another two steps back for us. And so, rather than repealing or trying to start over or go back to what we had, let's move forward and work with what we've got and continue to try to provide more health insurance for more people, because I think that's been one of the big benefits of this law. I have customers, like I said, who would not be able to afford insurance.
Joshua, we've got it loud and clear, and I appreciate your call. Noam, Lisa, here's Susie writes to us, I'm glad the newly insured get to keep their insurance. But Susie writes, Can we stop acting like this is a good law? If it's ensuring anything, it's ensuring that profits of large health insurance corporations keep making, they keep making profits and just get to bully more people about coverage. What about improving? Is there political room for that, Lisa, between the parties now, or is it just, you know, up or down?
Well, it doesn't seem like there really is any specific reforms that Democrats and Republicans agree on. It seems to be the case with the Obama administration that problems that they've seen in this law, they've taken care of themselves by executive action, including one of the long-term care piece of the act is called the CLASS Act, mm-hmm. that Secretary Sebelius felt was actually not viable, and they ended up not deploying it. So really, I think reforms that we'll see or changes in how it operates, I think at least until there's a new president, will only come from the executive office. I don't think that you'd see Congress involved in that. But on another note, politically, I do want to say I think there are a lot of Republican staffers today who are secretly very relieved because it's not clear that they really did have a backup plan quite yet today. But I think that now they're going to get back focused on their political message. But I also agree that, especially because it will take 60 votes in the Senate and the president signing it, but even 60 votes with a Republican president, I just don't see a major reversal of Obama care in the near future anytime.
Noam, in the absence of a major turnover in Congress to put in very big Republican majorities and maybe a Republican president, are we now out of the health care evolution business for a while here? Is it steady as she goes? Or do you see room for people to get in there and bring out the screwdrivers and wrenches and work on this thing?
Well, I think Lisa's right, probably not in the short term. I mean, the politics are still so toxic with the presidential campaign coming and such a premium put on attacking Obamacare by the grassroots of the GOP. I think it's unlikely that you'll see very much. I think going forward with a new president, though, I think it's not inconceivable that there may be some opportunities in 2017, whether it's a Republican president or a Democratic president, to make adjustments to the law, make the kind of adjustments, frankly, that people who support the law even concede would need to be done, but have been loath to propose or push because any acknowledgement that things aren't working right became a political liability.
United States Supreme Court today in a 6-3 decision, in effect, saves Obamacare. Noam Levy with the Los Angeles Times joining us from Washington. Thank you very much for being with us, Noam.
My pleasure.
And Lisa Desjardins with the PBS NewsHour, political director there. Lisa, you're terrific. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you.
Thanks for all of your calls, listeners. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.